Hey kids, it's time for another episode of Baby Boomers Talk Radio. This week, Torchy Smith interviews Scott Schwartz. You may remember Scott from The Toy with Richard Pryor and Jackie Gleason, or from A Christmas Story. He was the kid who got his tongue stuck to the flagpole. Torchy does a great job in getting Scott to open up about what it's like growing up after being a child star. And just a reminder, if you want to hear interviews with other famous baby boomers, go to www.babyboomerstalkradio.com. Torchy has a whole new podcast format on his site, and you won't believe some of the stars he's talked to. The interviews are archived, so you can listen anytime you want. That's babyboomerstalkradio.com. Now, here's Torchy Smith with Scott Schwartz.
Good morning, Scott. This is
good morning.
And you're in L.A. I'm in Cleveland, Ohio. We met in Hollywood. So we're old friends for about a week or so. Just want to ask you a few questions right off the bat. How did you get started? You ended up in L.A., but you started in New Jersey. Is that right?
Yeah.
And your parents put you in acting classes, or what happened there?
Nope, nothing like that. I was going to a movie co-op in Manhattan with my dad when I was a kid, because that's what he loved to do. Didn't go to baseball games, we went to the movies.
Uh-huh.
And there was a gentleman there who was producing some commercials and asked me if I wanted to do one.
And so from there, how did you get to L.A., though? That was in New Jersey.
Oh, no, I didn't come to Los Angeles until past high school.
Oh.
Much later.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So you shot The Toy and you shot Christmas Story while you were still living in New Jersey.
Yep, exactly.
Oh, man, so we didn't realize that. But when you shot The Christmas Story, was it in Cleveland?
Sure, we shot at Higbee's.
You shot at Higbee's, okay. Somewhere I learned that you also shot it in Canada somehow.
No, we shot in St. Catharines, Ontario.
Uh-huh.
We shot in Toronto.
So
it was a multi-location shoot for sure.
Okay. Well, as you well know, the house that it was portrayed at is now a museum here in Cleveland. I haven't been to it, but I heard others have. And have you been back to that house since you shot the movie? Or they should have had you there, at least flew you in and made a presentation.
We were there for the grand opening.
Oh, you were? Okay. And how many times a day do people ask you about your tongue being stuck to the pole?
Every day.
Every day someone comes up to you. It's like Geraldo. Everybody asks him about Al Capone's tomb. So, and you want to tell people how that really came about, or how fake it was, or what did they do so you wouldn't get hurt?
It was a plastic pole, and they had it over a real pole.
Uh-huh.
They put a hole in it and little vacuum tube suction.
Uh-huh. So it looked like it was really sticking there when you pulled away.
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't, but
yeah.
You want to get the effect.
Right. Yeah, once a day, I'm sorry I have to ask you that, but at least more than one person will hear this, I think. So, you also starred in a movie called Kidco that was written by a friend of mine, and that was in Tucson. And how did you get that part? Did you have to go to L.A. to apply for that part, or try out for that part, or how were you discovered for that one?
No, I was cast out of New York for all the films I did as a kid.
Oh, okay. So,
again, just the audition process.
Yeah. Well. So, yeah, and usually it's the other way around. I hear the dog in the background. How many dogs do you have today, by the way?
Actually, that wasn't my dog. That's my next-door neighbor's dog.
Oh. Well, I was surprised when your dog popped up at dinner, but you have more than one dog, or was that your only one? You have four dogs?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you live in the L.A. area now. And you have a store with your dad, I heard.
Yes, my dad has a shop. It's a sports and movie memorabilia store.
Uh-huh. And
that's sports. It's again, it's sports and movie stuff. That's pretty much what it is. It's sports memorabilia, some older cards. He doesn't do new trading cards anymore.
Uh-huh.
And the rest is 3,800 square feet of
wow.
board games, action figures.
Wow.
You know, all vintage stuff.
Wow.
You know, from movies, TV shows, 8x10 photos, 11x14s, autographs, tons of stuff. There's over a million items in the shop.
Jeez, oh man. Started from just a small trading card shop, is that it, when you bought it? And then you expanded it? Is that what happened?
When he originally bought it in 87, yeah, it was like 800 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a baseball card store. I mean, yeah, they had like plates and some autographed photos and stuff like that.
Uh-huh. Well,
but the market has changed. The and he's moved twice over the years.
And where is
now it? It's a little bit bigger.
And where is it located now?
Simi Valley, California.
Is that on Ventura Boulevard, the main strip there? Is that where it is?
No, Simi Valley is...
Oh, Simi Valley, that's further out. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we're the home of the Ronald Reagan Library.
Yes, yes. And what's it called, so if people know... what's
the name of the store?
Yeah.
Is Sports and Movie Stuff.
Sports and Movie Stuff. Okay, so anybody who's in Simi Valley or probably already knows about it, but if anybody... And you work right there, so if you came there, you'd give them an autograph picture and...
Well, no, let's not volunteer my services now.
Okay, I was just kidding. It's close enough. I'm not sure how far Simi Valley is from L.A., but it's really a suburb.
About a half hour.
About a half
35
hour.
35 minutes.
Okay, so it's worth the drive. Worth the drive.
Oh, listen, if you're into especially vintage Hollywood stuff, there is no store like this west of the Mississippi.
Wow.
Nobody has as much original product and merchandise as my dad.
Huh.
Now, there's over a million items.
Jeez.
He doesn't do duplicate stuff. He doesn't do the new pop little figurehead things. No, it's vintage stuff.
So people come in there and they want to sell their stuff as well as buy, sort of like the pawn shop thing on TV, or
bring their stuff in to sell. Of course, buy, sell, and trade. You betcha.
I said, okay, all right. So it's not just a retail store. It works one way. Okay. Well, that sounds more interesting than the program that's on now. At least to me, it is. So, what is your favorite deli in New York? I mean, in Hollywood. There, is there any good delis? Because we have some Cleveland people who have a deli in L.A.
You know, delis are out here, if you're, a New York-style deli.
Yeah.
You know, really, I mean, it's still Cantor's downtown, down in the, Fairfax District.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I mean,
yeah.
We have some other ones, but they're just not nearly as good.
Yeah. There was Kaufman's I ate at in Santa Monica.
Mm.
I thought that was okay. But, and then there's Jerry's, which is more of a franchise.
Nah. Doesn't even really qualify.
Yeah. Okay. Well, is there anything else you want to talk about as far as your career? One area is the toy. I suppose everybody knows you best from that, even though you've been in a ton of other things. And you had a relationship with Richard Pryor as owning him or running him out. And did you become good friends with him? Was he a nice guy to you?
From the day I met him until the day he was gone, we were very close.
Wow.
Very, very good man. And I miss him daily.
And by that time, you could understand his jokes, I suppose.
I was 13, 14 years old. And my family was never one of those, don't say this word, don't say that word. That's not, words are words.
Right.
My dad was never a language barrier person. I was 8 years old. He took me to see Blazing Saddles. Come on.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but today Blazing Saddles is a little bit racy compared to, you know, it's not politically correct.
Listen, you know, we've become a politically correct country, which is a bunch of baloney.
There you,
you know,
go.
We have the First Amendment, freedom of speech. Enjoy, say what you want.
Yeah.
It's up to the other person to either give an opinion to agree or disagree, but that's their right.
Uh-huh.
You know, but Blazing Saddles is just a fun comedy movie.
Right, right.
It's made to be offensive.
Exactly, exactly. But people take it so serious today. It's a different generation. You're allowed to say the N-word in certain respects, and then if you're somebody else, you can't. It becomes a very gray area.
It's just the word. It's the context it's used in, and in movies and television, it's been part of the culture. It's been part of what the last 100-something years has been.
Right. Yeah.
You know, there was a country western guy. I guess he went to a costume party or something, and he did blackface.
Mm-hmm.
And it was meant as a joke, not as a statement.
Right. Right. Well,
and they just berated him for it.
Yeah.
Whereas in the movie The Jolson Story and Jolson Sings Again, which is the story of Al Jolson, who was a singer in the turn of the century and through the first half of the 20th century, from 1900 to 1950, he was considered the greatest entertainer. But what did he do? That's what he did.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And they're taking that history kind of out of the picture, whether it's out of books or out of the lectures. You know it because you're maybe in the industry. I'm sure some of your friends who are 40 years old or so don't know it because it's been eliminated. You know, I watched The Little Rascals every single day when I was a kid. Every single day. You came home from school, you watched The Little Rascals, and they were repeats all the time. My daughter actually did the story of Stymie on the E! Channel, True Hollywood Stories. And some of the things that Stymie said and did over The Little Rascals are bleeped out now. And back then, The Little Rascals were the first people to be integrated. They were friends.
Yep.
And there was integration, and they didn't think anything of it. You know, they made jokes about it, being black in certain ways, but it was so innocent. You know,
innocent, but like you said, it's the first real integration. And so people don't look at the big picture, they look at the small picture.
Yeah. Well, back then nobody thought anything of it. They're neighborhood kids playing together. And that's why the new Little Rascals never stood up, probably, because it was so fake. You couldn't write the stuff they did back then with, I forgot the Oliver and Hardy guy who produced it now. I can't remember his name.
But Hal Roach.
Hal Roach. Hal Roach. Anything Hal Roach did was outstanding because
that's the 30s. Then you go to the 50s and you have Amos and Andy. That was on television.
Yeah. Yeah.
And people say, oh my God, it's terrible. Look at how they portray, African American black people. And I'm like, wait a minute. You know.
How many people your age know Amos and Andy? I mean, do they even know about
it? Very few.
I
know it because of the background with my dad going to movie theaters.
Right.
Being exposed to that Hollywood part of Hollywood history.
Yeah.
And we had it on video and we laughed and it wasn't anything that was racist. It was, they all had jobs. They were lawyers and judges and police officers. And, it's what the times presented.
Yeah. Well,
but nobody cursed at anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody killed a cop. Nobody, rap music that's offensive.
Yeah.
There are things that are offensive. It's just how you make it, and that was not made that way.
Yeah, I know. And somebody new looking at it doesn't get it because they didn't have a sense of history of what the times were like. Even though there were racist people in those times and there was segregation, it wasn't done in any derogatory way.
You go from Amos and Andy in the 50s to Archie Bunker in the 70s.
Right.
And Archie Bunker was racist.
Right.
But he's made to understand throughout the years of the show that he's wrong.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, and from All in the Family, you get The Jeffersons. You get Sanford and Son. You get other shows.
Exactly. But now what do we have? We have anything that is, how can I put it? Somebody who would think it's offensive, maybe if 1% think of it, it's offensive, the lawyers say no, don't do it. But then again, we have rap music, which is totally offensive, and that's okay.
So. Again, it's called freedom of speech or First Amendment. You want to do it, you can do it. Doesn't mean somebody else has to listen to it.
Right, right. Are you politically involved at all in your area? I mean, Hollywood is liberal for the most part. It's liberal. And what's going on now? Do you have friends who are in the industry who sort of, I want to say, come out of the closet? That's not the right term, but it is in some ways. If you expose yourself as being Republican or conservative, you can't go to the right dinner parties.
You know, I have friends on both sides of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sort of an up the middle person. Mm-hmm. I try and look at a candidate as opposed to what party they represent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and their views and their what they want to do, what their plans are, I guess, so to speak. I've watched enough presidential races at this point to understand that 98% of what they say is baloney anyway.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
We're going to do this. We're going to do that. But then they get there and they realize, well, it's just not as easy as they thought.
Yeah. Well, in this election, I don't think anybody is for their candidate. It's they're against the other one. That's how I put it.
This is the first one that we know of where people just generally I want to say upset or angry. You know, the political machine has made one guy to be the bad guy,
mm-hmm.
and she's not great either.
Mm-hmm.
You got two candidates who are not great candidates. You know, is there one better than the other? Well, that's up to each individual person's opinion.
Yeah. We used to have a silent majority who, they would call it not a throwback, I'm also looking for the word, where they would come out mad that they were always silent about, and I think that's what's happening today. People who never got involved are giving an opinion. But it has to do with an education. The people of, I think, you're what, a millennium? You're not a millennium, you're X generation. And I think many of your friends may not have a Watergate background or a Vietnam background to understand how and where we're coming from. This country was a lot more violent during the 60s, a lot more violent. And people forget about that, and people forget about what Watergate was all about, which relates very much to this election. And that's troubling to a baby boomer for some reason. And we were forced to understand. Like your father took you to the movies and sat you down. That just doesn't happen. So that's my...
Well, the society has changed. People have changed. What it means to be a high-powered politician has changed. You know, we've gone through decades of peace and we've gone through decades of war. You know, I don't really think people want decades of war again.
No.
At the same time, like I said before, we've become so, as a society, politically correct, or they want you to be politically correct. You know, I don't think people really know deep down what to do. Do we do this? Do we do that? I don't know. And then they listen to, you know, both sides of this particular race, and you know, they get upset. You know, if you mention her name, they'll have a decent conversation with you. If you mention his name, people hit the roof. Oh my God, I can't. But I'm going, wait a minute now. I'm just having a civil conversation. Yeah. There's no reason to get excited about any of this.
You hit the nail right on the head there. I have that problem all the time.
You know, there are people that have been elected, and people go, oh my God, if this person's elected, oh my God, we're going to go into World War III, and they're going to do this, and then nothing ever happens.
Yeah, we had a guy named Goldwater, and they had a commercial with a little girl and a flower, and in the background was the nuclear explosion
of
Goldwater. So, yeah, again, we have a sense of, as baby boomers, we have a sense of a barometer to judge from that. And new people,
well,
especially...
You can always judge somebody on what they have done or what they have not done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people think that if Mr. Trump gets elected that the world is going to come to an end and this is going to happen, and then I'm going, when is the last time anybody predicted anything accurate?
That's,
you know,
sure,
he's
yeah.
going to do this. And I go, mm-hmm. well, why would he do that? Why would he cause war and death and mm-hmm. destruction? You know, oh, he's going to, you know, kill Israel. He has grandchildren that are Jewish.
Yeah.
You know, the things that people say make no sense.
Yeah.
And you know.
So Hollywood people actually aren't all on the same wavelength. There's
a lot of people that are straight Democrats, and it doesn't make any difference if you put Mickey Mouse on that platform. If Mickey Mouse is Democrat, that's who they're going to vote for, just because.
Well, Mickey Mouse isn't so bad.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say is, and try to get out of you, is what percentage you think are Republicans in Hollywood, in the Hollywood community? It's not 50-50.
Oh, no, it's like 85-15.
Okay, so that's...
I think that this is the first time in forever that you're actually going to see people who have discussions and they get together and they do the fundraising and this and that. But when it comes the day to come and go cast that ballot, cast that vote, you might see people not exactly doing what they say they're going to do.
Yeah, well, they're afraid to come out. That's what I meant. Will they be blackballed? Will they get jobs if they said, hey, you know, I'm for Trump?
Well, the thing is, you know, your vote is your vote. It's a secret vote. You put it, you mm-hmm. go in the thing, and you do the, you make your choices, and you walk out and have a nice day. Nobody goes, oh, sir, did you make sure to do this? Oh, yes, we have you as doing that. No, they don't do that.
Yeah. Well, we all know that Barbara Streisand is a liberal. We all know certain people are liberal. We all know that the guy who said, make my day, is a Republican. they don't care because what their politics is, they're going to get a job or not get a job, and they don't care. I mean, they're at that point in life.
But there are celebrities that have come out for either side, and people argue with them, how can you do this, what are you thinking, and it's, you know, it's liberal America that, you know, wants to be heard, only wants to be heard, and if you don't agree with them, they'll pound you into the ground until you change your mind, or at least until you tell them you've changed your mind.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's no different than some other liberal areas of the country. I mean, in the Midwest, it isn't certainly 85-15 like you expressed it.
Oh, not even close.
And,
no.
Indiana.
They want jobs. They want to make sure they're working. They want to make sure that the government is pro-farming in all forms and fashions. They want to, you know, make sure people are working.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah, and in L.A. they're not manufacturing widgets all the time, whatever the manufacturer, you know, tool and die things and pencils and food.
Hollywood makes movies. They make television shows.
Yeah, so
they're creative people. They just want to enjoy the freedoms that have been provided by the forefathers of the country.
Yeah.
You know, and number one is the First Amendment, and we've sort of lost that now because, you know, everybody is now important. It doesn't make any difference who you are. You could be, you know, Bob, Joe, whatever, off the street, and you are just as important as a senator.
Did you have a liberal education, though, when you went to school? I mean, was some of these things forced down you? And this is interesting because, you know, we're not the same age. Let people know that. I'm 69, and you're about 40, right?
I'm in my upper 40s.
Oh, you don't look that way. When I saw you, I didn't even realize.
Thank you.
No, really, you don't at all. Okay, so you're in your upper 40s. Did you go to school? Did you go to college at all?
I went to one semester. That was about all I could handle.
Okay.
You know, when you start working at 8 years old,
okay,
by the time you get to the end of high school, you know, my educational process as far as what I wanted to do, I was there already, you know.
Yeah, You just proved my point. Somebody who had to work and bring home a paycheck and know what bills are and everything.
Well, 8 years old, I didn't have to work. At 12 years old, I didn't have to work.
Yeah.
It was what was presented, you know, in front of me to do television and films and commercials and Broadway and off-Broadway.
Yeah, but you learned it early. I mean, you know, you learned capitalism no matter what you were doing. I mean, you just learned about it by, you know, getting a paycheck or whatever, you know, if you understood work. So you weren't touched by the professors who could, I don't want to say brainwash, but, you know, give you a slant from the Vietnam years and the hippie years, which many of them, I think, went into education. I'm going to get in trouble by saying all this. But maybe that's why you formed a better idea of a work ethic than your colleagues, is what I'm trying to say. Yes or no?
Well, work ethic. I mean, my father was in New Jersey. He was a window cleaner.
Wow.
He owned a maintenance business, window cleaning and floor waxing.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time, you know, again, I started movies when I was 8, and at the same time, during the summers, by the time I was, you know, 10, 11, 12 years old, I was going out with my dad during vacations, winter break, summer break, and I was washing windows with my father at 5:30, quarter to 6 in the morning.
Yeah,
you know, there was no such thing as, "Hey, Dad, you know, I'm in the movies now, therefore, I'm you know, better than somebody else."
Yeah,
and my father would say, "Oh, you want to have spending money? Okay, you get your behind up, and we go out and we go to work."
Yeah, yep. I've heard that from other kid actors. Some of them are just like you. The Mouseketeers. A lot of them worked on the weekends and had to do their chores, and that's what makes you, I think, a stronger, better person than some of those who we're not hearing from at all. So,
there's a lot of people that get handed a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't handed anything.
Yeah.
I went out and I worked for it.
Yeah.
You know, you get up at 5:30 in the morning, you're out by, you know, 10 to 6, and you're in 35-degree weather in central New Jersey washing windows.
Hey.
And I'm thinking in my head, wait a minute, you know, 2 months ago I was, you know, shooting a movie. What is this nonsense?
Right.
But then it's like, hey, you want to understand life, you get out there and you work.
Right, and let people know that you didn't shoot just two movies. You were on Jump Street. You were on A Time to Live. You were on an afternoon special. A Summer Switch was a couple.
Like I said, you know, I did Broadway, Broadway.
Yeah,
over 120 commercials, 130 commercials, whatever it was.
Yeah.
TV movies of the week, ABC After School specials. You know, I did the three films back to back to back. I did The Toy. Then I did a movie called Kid Code. Then I did A Christmas Story.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
through the teenage years, you know, I didn't work as much. I hit puberty late. I was at like 15 plus when I hit puberty.
Yeah,
my face changed. My voice changed. You don't get as much work in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
That does not mean you do not go out and do something.
Right.
You know, I'd say get a job. In my case, my father owned a business that I could work at. So I did that.
Right.
You know, I worked at a Burger King. You know, I did the fast food thing with friends of mine. I worked at a movie theater. You know, I'm ripping tickets, and people are going, aren't you like the guy in the movies? Yeah. Well, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Got to work, dude. Need a job. Yeah. Got a car. Got to put gas in the car.
Hooray for Hollywood.
Very strict as far as trying to instill a work ethic in me.
Well,
which a lot of people in Hollywood, they don't do.
Right.
You know, parents, they just let their children become spoiled brats. You know, oh, you're on this TV show. Well, that's great. Well, once the TV show is over, then what?
Yeah.
What are you able to do? Well, I'm an actor. That's not a job. That's not a real job.
Yeah, and that's what minor consideration is all about, what you're active in. I've gone through details with that with other interviews, but people, if they listen to my other interviews, they know about a minor consideration, which you're president of, and rightfully so. They have the right guy.
I mean, a minor consideration is for child labor laws. We do get laws changed around the country, and we try and help former, current, and even, at the end of the day, future children who are in the entertainment business, whether it be singing, acting, dancing, modeling, whatever it is. You know, my goal is to just try and educate, to tell a kid who's on a series, this is not going to last forever. You know, as fate would have it, I met one of the biggest former child stars on the planet 2 weeks ago. I met Justin Bieber. And I had a little chit chat with him. And I said things to him nobody has ever said to him. Now, how do I know this? Because one of his boys was with him. And after I finished talking to Justin, the other guy was talking to me. And he says, "You don't talk like other people." And I said, "Listen, I've been at this for 38 years. I understand I don't talk like other people. I'm not interested in the kid's fame. I'm not interested in taking anything from him." I said to him, "Listen, congratulations, continued success, save your money." Because you don't know what the future is going to hold. Right now, it's all bubbly and wonderful. And in 5 years or 10 years, you don't know what's going to happen. And I mean, you know, he's bought the Lamborghinis and the Maserati and the this and the that, but he's made enough money that he should be okay. You know, one can only hope. There's other child actors who have made millions of dollars, and it's just all going to the toilet.
It's the same with athletes who are young and don't have a good business manager and give them all the money, and the Lamborghinis go into the used car shop eventually.
So. Well, your lifespan as an athlete normally is A, the talent you have, the ability you have, and B, age. You know, you can, you know, the greatest athletes in the world still have to hang up their shoes. Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, you know, Walter Payton, Emmitt Smith. They all had to hang it up at the end of the day. Shaquille O'Neal, I mean, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the end of their monstrous earning potential. As an actor, you can be a struggling actor for 30 years, and then all of a sudden that right role shows up. And you go from nobody to somebody overnight, and people say, "Oh my God, it's an overnight success." And the guy's going, "Really? Where have you been for 30 years? What is this overnight stuff?"
When you told Justin Bieber this, what was the look on his face? Was he like taking it in, or like...
He was just kind of puzzled. He just kind of looking at me because, again, I wasn't there as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard one of his songs. That's not me. I don't listen to that stuff.
Well,
you know, I looked at him as a former child performer who's now in his early 20s, mid-20s, 24, 25, whatever he is. And I'm more concerned for his well-being as a human, being, as a person.
Did he know who you were at all? Did he know you're with a minor consideration? Did he know all that?
I told him, but he had no idea what that was. You know, he didn't even know Christmas Story, as funny as that sounds. And he's from Canada, which more kids from Canada know Christmas Story than people in the United States. But his friends knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And his friends are like, "Hey, listen to this guy."
Yeah. Well, he lives next door to Bobby Burgess, of all people, and Bobby Burgess said, you know, I was a Mouseketeer. Oh, no, maybe that was somebody else. I'm sorry. I got the two mixed up. Never mind. But anyways, one of the main guys that was a Mouseketeer lives next to Bobby Burgess, who was also a Mouseketeer. I can't think of his name right now. And he said, oh, that's nice. And that was it. And they're next door neighbors. So, but he could be clueless, but he didn't go through what you did. I suppose he's going to have to get his knacks a little bit, and then he'll understand. But I don't think they can. But
it's very difficult to tell somebody who makes millions and millions of dollars and has only known that since he was 12, 13 years old, for over a decade, this is all he's known, to say, listen, I understand, I know. I was there not on the level he was as far as either fame or money, but I was there.
Mm-hmm.
And all I'm saying is, the gravy train does not last forever.
No. You know, I always bring up Mickey Rooney, who is probably the greatest longevity star as a kid to a grown-up. And he didn't die with a whole lot of money.
You know, Mickey was an interesting duck, though. You know, Mickey was married 6 times, 7
right.
times, whatever it was, gave away so much money to so many women, kids, different things. And, of course, the money was not like it is today, even if you multiplied it from when he did things.
Yeah.
He never had tens of millions, but he had millions.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, he was never broke. He lived in a very, very comfortable home out here, an old town called Westlake Village. And he had a house right on the lake, right on a little man-made lake that they have. He was far from broke. He certainly wasn't nearly as comfortable as he could have been.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, did that affect his day-to-day living? No. He had a home. He had cars. He had people that cleaned his home. You know, he was married to Jan for decades, his last wife. And they went out and they did shows. And, you know, I think in his case it was more he enjoyed what he did. He enjoyed the fame. He enjoyed being Mickey Rooney. You know,
yeah.
I met him many, many times. He used to come into my dad's store years ago because he only lived about 5 minutes away.
Mm.
And, you know, he was a very, as he got older, an uptight man. You know, I think he sincerely just wanted to retire. But it's that old thing, when you retire, what do you do?
Yeah.
And if you're an actor, it's not a 9-to-5 job.
Yeah. Well, he was one of the few people that could start at 4 or 5 years old and end his career still in the business, is what my point is. I don't know of anybody.
Well, there were many that would have if they would have made it through the years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had Judy Garland, you had Deanna Durbin, you know, you had, who else from that time frame of being a child star?
Yeah.
There were many. Scotty Beckett.
Rosemarie.
That if they kept it together, they could have continued on. When you years ago, you had the studio system. It was different. They put their people to work. That's what they did. It's now corporate run. It's no more family.
Yeah.
Now it's bottom line dollars and cents, as opposed to, hey, we have Mickey on the payroll. Why don't we make him the uncle in this movie?
Yeah. You're in business for yourself. You're
now everything is packaging. Everything is corporate.
Outsourced too. Yeah.
You know, so it was a matter of if you survived, you made it.
Yeah.
You know, Deanna Durbin was the biggest star on the planet, really, in the 40s, and by the middle 50s, she was just tired of it, and she met a nice man and said, "I'm getting out of here. I had enough of this nonsense." You know, and moved to France, and that was the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, Shirley Temple, another one, you know, she got to a point where she just, that's not what was in her heart.
Yeah.
You know, so she became an ambassador to the UN. I mean.
Yeah, but she didn't go off the deep end. Like, I predict many of these people that you're talking about of today will. because they don't.
It's fame, it's money, it's pressure from companies, the media, the studios. It's not like it used to be. It really isn't. Nobody looks out for anybody anymore.
They
will work you absolutely until the last ounce of water and blood in your body. They move you to the side and they got a new product. They don't build careers anymore. They build fame. All they want to do is make you famous as fast as humanly possible so you can make as much money as humanly possible, be it for them, your public relations person, a manager, an agent, and as soon as the fire is not as hot, they move you to the side, bring a new face in.
Yeah.
You know, there's many, many talented people, especially in my generation, you know, who have had ups and downs, you know, from working to not working.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of talented people sitting on the sidelines just going, hey, I'm still here.
Yeah.
I'm still here. What's going on? Why am I not the uncle in this movie or the aunt or the cousin or the whatever?
We have a surplus of talent. There's so much talent out there. It's just unbelievable.
It's a surplus of talent to some degree, but it's, again, it's who's the new face.
Mm.
They're always interested in who's the new face. You know, I've said this, you know, repeatedly. Alfonso Ribeiro, you know, he was a, you know, child actor. He's the kid in the Michael Jackson Pepsi commercial, and then he was on Silver Spoons, and then he was on Fresh Prince, and then he didn't work for a while.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Meanwhile, he was more talented than anybody in Hollywood. Anybody. Sing, act, dance, whatever you wanted, he could do it.
Yeah.
And it took him some years to do other things. So people go, you know what, I like that guy. He's funny. He can dance. He can sing. Let's do something with him. There's very few that could do what he did when he did it.
Yeah.
And he can still do it. And he's, you know, he still gets work. And he's got, you know, different shows that have been on and off the air. And he directs a little bit. You know, Erin Murphy, you know, great example. She's wonderful. But again, she's an older face. I'm not saying she's old. She's just an older face. People are, oh, yeah, we know her. We want to find somebody new. Terrific.
Yeah, but I don't want to see those new people. I'd rather see the old ones. I'd rather see who did you...
And you're not alone. There's a lot of people that think that way. I've actually just started a TV talk show that's going to be premiering on Vimeo, and I believe about a week from now. It's called Flashback Fridays, and we're interviewing... Our genre is people a little bit 70s, more 80s and 90s.
Age-wise, you mean age 70, 80, 90? Really?
No. From the eras.
From the eras.
1980s, 1990s.
Yeah. Well, that's me. That's what I'm doing. You got to have me on. that's my whole gig. Baby boomers.
I'm getting people that people know and they remember. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, my God, look at these guys. They're still terrific.
Right. Right. I saw that just at that show we were at. I could tell the ones in the room that, you know, still had a charisma about them. So,
if you grow up around the industry or in the industry, I grew up in New Jersey. So, I mean, I had a group of people around me who were regular folk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just regular people. And they've gone on to be teachers and police officers and correctional facility officers, you know, bus drivers, whatever. Airline pilots, a friend of mine I went to school with, he was a United pilot for 15, 20 years, now he's with UPS. But that's not the same living. It's living differently. When they see me, they go, so where have you been? You know, and they don't mean like, oh my goodness, you know, nobody's ever thought of you. It's, you know, they want to hear my adventures, you know, the places that I go and the people that I meet and the things that I do, because it's a different life than what they have.
Right.
You know, they want to hear my stories about, you know, the WWE, you know, and hanging out with Stephanie McMahon and Triple H and Roddy Piper and Hogan and Randy Savage and all those people. And, you know, and just traveling the country and going to Memphis and seeing Graceland and my friend Jerry the King Lawler, who's a Hall of Famer in WWE, who used to wrestle Andy Kaufman in the 70s. You know, sports people. I mean, I did a lot of sports guys and that I was friends with in the 80s and 90s, you know, Mark McGwire and Barry Bonds and Shaquille O'Neal and Anthony Hardaway and Chris Webber, and they were my friends, and people just don't, this is not the normal life, but that wasn't the life I was presented with.
Yeah, I mean, there is a connection that you don't get on TV and regular TV with the people you just named, and they still have a draw to certain, even if it's a draw to 10% of the population, that's still millions and millions of people. So
I've always said it, you know, everybody is human, therefore everybody loves something, everybody is a fan of somebody, and it doesn't make any difference how famous they are, they're a fan of somebody. I met Ron Howard, and the second he found out I worked with Jackie Gleason, he wanted to talk about Jackie Gleason because he had never met him. You know, and he to some degree became fanboy, which there's nothing wrong with that. It's terrific.
Right.
You know, he wanted to talk about Gleason, and it was wonderful.
I know. A lot of us have those things and that stay with us, but it's probably from childhood, of course. I had Karen call me from the Mouseketeers. First thing I thought of, I think I was 8 years old and I kissed the TV set when she was on. You know, and here she is calling me. So it's a childhood thing, I think, and it stays with you. So you want to tune some of these other people off that just are on the new programs. You're like, who are these people? You know, they come and go, and to me, there's some of them are talented, but a lot of them aren't as talented. So there is a market.
I don't begrudge anybody of anything. If you are lucky enough and you get on a show of any kind and you make some money and you get a little fame, you get a taste of the stardom, okay, fine. Good for you, you know, but you have to learn from it. You know, not everybody could be Ed O'Neill, where he comes up in the Midwest in Ohio. He's going to be a football player. He gets to the last cut of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and then he went into acting, and he was in theater, and he loved it. And you know, 20 years later, 15 years later, whatever it was, he ends up as the lead on Married with Children and has a 12-year run or something on Married with Children and does very well for himself.
From Youngstown, Ohio, by the way. I know, my son
and then he goes on to Modern Family. And I've known Ed for, my goodness, 29 years since I moved to California. Ed is the same person he was the first day I met him. He's not let fame, he's not let money, nothing has changed him. He's still just that normal guy. You know, he would much rather be sitting in a room with people that he knew growing up, people from college, some people that he's worked with. He'd much rather be in a room with those people than in a room of people standing and applauding him.
Yeah.
While, yes, on the one level, it's always nice that your work is appreciated. At the same time, you know, fame, so to speak, is not what's inside of everybody's heart. It's an offshoot of the job you have working in Hollywood. You're a producer. You could, unless you're Steven Spielberg, you can walk the streets and nobody will know who you are. You know, 90% of the public would not know what Brian Grazier looks like.
Right.
They wouldn't know him. He could walk, and they just one person out of 100 would go, aren't you that movie guy? Otherwise, forget it.
Yeah.
You know, and if he was outside of Hollywood, it's probably one every 500.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're on television and you are what they call a celebrity, you know, not everybody on television is a celebrity. You know, the reality stars are not real celebrities. They're manufactured media celebrities.
Yes.
And that's their job.
Yes.
Their job is to promote the hell out of you. The PR person's job is to make sure you're on the cover of this and in this magazine and on this talk show and you're on this ET thing or behind the scenes of whatever. But that does not necessarily make you, you know, a celebrity.
Right.
A movie star. Yeah. You know, you're not a star.
Yeah.
You're a press-made celebrity.
Still have to have talent of some sort.
Well, no. Hey, listen, people on reality television, there's a lot of them that have no talent.
Yeah, well, that's the problem.
But what the producer wants, we want the guy that can act like the biggest idiot on planet Earth.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if that takes talent, okay. Then I'll give it to you. But most of the time, not.
Yeah.
You know, it's why most of the reality stars have not crossed over to anything what we would consider legitimate theater, legitimate movie making.
There was a guy named Johnny something that relied to just being on all these reality shows. He had no talent, and I can't even remember his last name, but yeah, Johnny something, and he had no talent, and I nobody knows why he was a celebrity.
Yeah, the thing is, we'll just take your example, Johnny. I don't know who it is, but okay. Johnny is not going to be is not going to be co-starring with Al Pacino, Tom Hanks, John Travolta, Tom Cruise. Just not Sandra Bullock. It's just not going to happen.
He called himself Johnny Hollywood or something.
Well, forget it.
Yeah,
you know. So he's not going to be co-starring with Robert Downey Jr. in the next Avengers film. It's not going to happen.
Right. I know. But there's a market. See, the big piece of pie that we used to have divided is now divided in so many slices that if you're a Lithuanian dancer, you're going to find some kind of program that's about Lithuanian dancers.
That's a result of satellite television, 900 stations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, growing up, I'm sure you as well as, you know, as most people of our age knows, you know, pre-cable, we had 5 stations. We had the 3 nationals, 2 locals. That's it. Thank you. Have a nice day.
Yeah.
Then it went to the cable, the beginnings of cable, when you had that little box that you just laid down on the couch and it had 36 stations with that little bar. And you went back and forth to the different stations.
Yeah.
And then all you... it wasn't Time Warner. I'm trying to think. It might have been Time Warner that came out with that first cable box. That you had like 36 stations left to right, and that was it. But it was a bar. It wasn't wireless. It wasn't, you know, you had a cable that ran to the back of the television.
Yeah.
And then you go from there, and then you start with more cable. Then it's satellite television. Now you have 900 stations that need content. They need material for people to watch.
Yeah.
And yes, a lot of them buy syndicated stuff from previous years. You'll see Fresh Prince of Bel-Air or Seinfeld or Friends or whatever. But a lot of it is how cheaply can we make a product and throw it on our station?
Yep. That's what it is. And if you want to pay a little extra to see an HBO special of Games of Thrones, which is high quality stuff, that's where you're going to go. So I don't know.
HBO and Showtime, they develop their own shows. They've got some great stuff. You know, actually, you know, I'm not a Game of Thrones person. I don't watch Walking Dead. You know, a show that I love, it's called Episodes. And it's on Showtime. And it's with Matt LeBlanc. You know, Matt I worked with way, way, way back. I did a pilot for a series with him. And it's actually hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now on Showtime, you got Ray Donovan. You know, that's a pretty damn good show.
Yeah.
There's still good shows on regular television.
There are. I shouldn't have said that as just pay TV is going to give you a better show all the time. But
sometimes.
Yeah.
There are shows actually on after television that are, I mean, there's a lot of great stuff.
Yeah.
It's what your particular taste is, what you like, and if you want to give your time to watch that show.
Yeah, I watched the Harley Davidson boys on Discovery Channel. And who would think Discovery Channel has a movie I'd be interested in? And there it was. So, yeah. Well, I really appreciate the time you spent with me. I don't want to take up too much more of your time. You've been the most unusual interview I've had to date because we discussed something really, really important and something I'm interested in. So I hope my viewers also find it interesting, and I'm sure they will.
Listen, you know, the only thing again that I say is a minor consideration. It's a 501c4 charity, which basically means that we can just help laws get changed as opposed to a 501c3, but it's totally tax deductible. You go to www.aminorconsideration.org. You can Google it. You know, we do good work. None of us get paid. It's not a paying gig. We do this out of the love that we have for the careers that we had, the careers that we still have, and the fact that we respect others in our genre in what we do, and we want to help people. You know, we're not here for anything more than, you know, trying to give people a little sense of reality when sometimes reality is not what they live in.
That's very well put.
We hope you enjoyed today's program. And just a reminder, if you want to hear interviews with other famous baby boomers, go to www.babyboomerstalkradio.com. Join us next week for more Baby Boomers Talk Radio right here on TalkZone.com.